So I just spent 2 days in Nablus. The Israeli army reinvaded Nablus. And when we got there on Friday, the city was under curfew. During the 2 days that we spent there, there were explosions practically every other minute. The soldiers were going from shop to shop and exploding the doors. On an official search for bomb factories and other mechanisms of terror. But obviously, the goal was very obviously destruction and intimidation. A Palestinian radio journalist that we met with while we were in Nablus added additional insight into the motives behind such explosions, saying that when one of the first things that the soldiers do are explode or blow up the doors to, you know, like grocery shops and things like that, because they know that those are the first to get looted. And by you know, desperate and often very hungry people who have been locked up in their homes for days. And so this, of course, sows seeds of distrust amongst neighbors. And, you know, sowing this distrust amongst Palestinians is one of the primary objectives of the occupation, you know, divide and conquer. This is why Palestinians are often coerced into giving, you know, collaborative information to the occupation administration in order to get, you know, a driver's license or a permit to go into Israel or something. You have to give some kind of information. So the soldiers were going through the old city in Nablus, a beautiful, beautiful place. It reminded me of the old city in Jerusalem, except for sometimes even more beautiful. And they were using human shields to enter houses and occupy homes with the families inside. We went on Saturday, we went and sat with three different families in the old city whose homes had been occupied for many, many hours the day before. In one house, the woman was telling us they had opened up their chests and thrown everything all over the floor. And to my understanding, she explained to us that a woman in the house had a miscarriage during the whole ordeal, most likely induced from the trauma and fear of having soldiers invading your house and destroying everything. While we were there, the soldiers became increasingly aggressive towards internationals. Pretty much every time we ran into them, they attempted to detain or arrest us. I was detained along with another ISMer from Colorado. We were walking down a main street and passed by a couple army jeeps and a few soldiers occupying an office building. They had turned it into a little military outpost with camouflage netting on the door that they had broken into. And they said, this time, you know, you have to sit here for half an hour. Next time we see you walking on the street, you'll have to sit here for 2 days. So it was, they were constantly detaining us and threatening us with arrest. Saturday night, actually, the soldiers raided the hotel in the old city that all of the internationals were staying at. They raided the hotel and made all the internationals lie face down on the ground. And while they forced the receptionist to take them room to room, where they messed up all the beds and the rooms and shot a number of bullets into the ceiling of the lobby. So in general, it was just, you know, very, very calculated harassment, and intimidation. Saturday they lifted curfew from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., which everyone thought was a very strange time to lift curfew. During that time, you know, people ran out into the streets desperately trying to buy and sell food, vegetables and bread and fruit in the market, while soldiers in jeeps went racing down, like barreling down different streets, plowing into crowds and shooting rubber bullets at small crowds of frustrated stone-throwing kids who had just been let out of their houses for the first time in days. So they were shooting rubber bullets. They tear gassed the press when the press showed up at the scene of a Israeli sniper operating out of the occupied office building. The first thing they did was tear gas the press. But we feel actually that however frightening and disturbing the scenario was, that the presence of internationals and press there actually did help encourage the soldiers to not use live ammunition when they were shooting into the crowds. The one thing that was incredibly inspiring was working with the Union of Palestine Medical Relief Committee volunteers, you know, mostly teenagers, women and men, walking through the streets in groups of three or four or five, breaking curfew in order to get to those that were wounded and sick. And they were so humble and so brave, and these young Palestinian volunteers are just really inspiring. Even though the army was frequently detaining them, and a couple of them said that they had been beaten while detained before, they continued to walk around on the streets, often the only people out on the streets during curfew, and did it, just the way that they worked was really, really inspiring. When we were leaving the city on Sunday, we received word that in the area of Al Yasmina, there were 30 families that had been evicted from their homes and were being held out on the street while the soldiers were using two human shields that they had apparently captured at about 2 or 2:30 in the morning the night before. So they had been using them for about 8 hours straight to enter buildings, and there had already been two explosions heard. So either two homes were either damaged or destroyed already, and this was in the late morning. And they were threatening to destroy the rest of the homes that the 30 families had been thrown out. I'm not sure how many actually ended up getting destroyed. It seems like the situation de-escalated a bit since then. Most of the army had left this morning. When I left Nablus, which was really disturbing to do and really highlights how mobile and how free we internationals are, that we can leave Nablus under curfew, and move on. But I had to leave, and when I left, I received word that in the town of Jayus, which is in the Qalqilya region, which is where I've spent most of my time here in Palestine, a farmer had just been beaten by the soldiers, and they just yesterday started requiring farmers to show ID or permits when attempting to cross the gate in the fence to their land that has been confiscated and is on the other side. So this is a recent escalation of the use of the wall as a form of control and land theft, because until this point, the way that Israel kind of kept many Palestinian communities, kind of kept them docile, kept them from complaining too much, was by keeping the gates open, showing the world how the wall is just about security. It's not about land theft or apartheid. So they'd been keeping the gates open. But since the bombing in Jerusalem, which was in retaliation to the Israeli assassination of a Hamas leader in Gaza, the wall has the wall has been increasingly used as a form of collective punishment in terms of having all the gates locked and preventing any Palestinians from moving anywhere at any time. And from there it's moving, you know, is the situation is escalating and becoming very severe. In the town of Jayus, over 70% of the farmers' land has ended up on the other side of the wall. And they have had a lot of difficulties being able to get to it and farm it. I mean, basically right now, most farmers in Palestine are not farming profitably at all. They're just hopefully being able to maintain the land in the hopes of one day being able to actually use their land to make a living. So there's many levels to the occupation right now. There's, you know, in Nablus, there's invasion and curfew and explosions frequently. In Jayus, it's a slow death by a wall and land confiscation. In Qalqilya, it's a ghetto and becoming invisible to the rest of the world. You can see the Palestinian communities trapped by the wall. Their economy is crumbling, their livelihoods disappearing, their humanity and dignity suffering, having to beg the gate to be let through to their own land. It's been incredibly frustrating to see how what a monstrosity this wall is, how terrifying it is, how disturbing its effect on Palestinian villages and cities and people is. And to see that still this wall is being called defense and still this wall is being justified as for self-defense. It's been very upsetting. But like I said, there is so much, that there are so many Palestinians doing such inspiring work. It's amazing to see how many Palestinians manage to really hold on to their humanity and remain so kind and full of life and continuing to work tirelessly to help organize resistance to the wall and to the occupation, even in the face of these massive concrete structures imprisoning them and watchtowers and brutal soldiers controlling their lives.